Podcast is made possible with support from Verde Gallery, featuring Spirits, an exhibition of works by Lisa Nelson Raby and Ann Hughes through April 9th. Also featuring a tango lesson and dance on Saturday, March 12th at 8 p.m. Verde Gallery, a fine art gallery, cafe, and newsroom at 17 East Taylor, downtown Champaign. On the web at verdant-systems.com. Be inspired. Programming on WILL is made possible in part by Strawberry Fields on West Springfield Avenue in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields has an in-store nutritionist, provides a wide assortment of natural foods, vitamins, and supplements, as well as a full deli, coffee bar, bulk herbs, fresh breads, and produce.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 WILL Urbana. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. Today, I welcome your questions for registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet, nutrition, and exercise. If you'd like to talk with Susan, give us a call. Here are the numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for athletes and the general public. She's an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, and she's a frequent contributor to magazines on health and fitness. She's also the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. You'll find Susan on the web at www.eatandmove.com. That's EatandMove.com. She also has an office at Strawberry Fields in Urbana. Questions about diet, nutrition, exercise, they are invited this afternoon. Join us with a telephone call, 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Well, I thought maybe what we could do is take a look at the new guidelines for diet and exercise. We talked about them last month, kind of in general terms, but maybe today we could begin and look at them in more detail. And then as the listeners call in with their questions, we can pause and maybe that would be the glue that sort of holds us together.
Sure.
This afternoon is these new guidelines. First of all, what do you think of the new guidelines?
Well, I think the new guidelines, again, give us some great information in terms of broad recommendations for nutrition. And one of the challenges is turning over that broad recommendation into practical information in terms of what you can do on a daily basis. And I think that's where we can use the guidelines to give us some more concrete recommendations in terms of basic things that we know will make a difference for a lifetime. And I think that's what we want to think about with nutrition is knowing that these little things that we can do, if they're consistent, that's what brings down our risk of certain diseases and keeps us healthy and keeps us fit. And so it's maybe tackling one thing at a time and gradually working that into your daily routine. And then we look at one other thing that we can gradually work in. And before you know it, your lifestyle really is different than what it had been perhaps the year before.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about one of the new guidelines, and then we'll take a call from a listener in Flora here in just a second. One of the things that I found helpful in the new guidelines is that rather than saying eat five a day, now it's 4.5 cups at least of fruits and vegetables. So here we have a more specific recommendation. I find that helpful. That means more to me because the idea of portion and serving can be kind of confusing. But here, if I have it, I can visualize it, and a half cups.
Right. And 4.5 cups, somebody might think, oh my gosh, 4.5 cups, that's a lot of fruits and vegetables. But it's not really that much when you think, again, how easy it is to grab a juice in the morning. That certainly is a serving. I think one of the questions I get a lot lately, particularly from parents, is, you know, should I never let my children have juice, or should we not drink juice because it's liquid sugar and it's so bad for you and all these things? And I really don't take that stance because I think, again, you have a 6 or 8 ounces of 100% juice, particularly orange juice or grapefruit or something like that, you're getting a lot of benefit. Grape juice is real high in antioxidants. And so there are all kinds of benefits you can get. Now, of course, juice is higher in calories than other fruits and veggies, so maybe that's one of your servings. Mm-hmm. And then you really do look at building in, taking a couple fresh fruits with you, and that might be a couple more cups right there if you looked at the breakdown with that. And really looking at evening meal, most of us, unless we have salad for lunch or vegetable soup for lunch, something like that, it might be more difficult to get veggies during the day. But the evening meal really should be surrounded mostly by, you've got your protein, then a lot of vegetables in there, because that's the time we can easily get another couple cups of vegetables. And so really, if you look at it that way, more fruit earlier in the day, more veggies later in the day, that might be an easy way for people to break down and say, gosh, I could get that in.
Okay. Now let's talk with our listener who's waiting for us in Flora on line 4. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my phone call. Like so many others, I have a problem in keeping my cholesterol down, especially the LDL. And I see a product that is now being promoted that's in a lot of different items called plant sterols. And I'm wondering, is this effective in helping keep down or helping fight LDL cholesterol? And are other items like that I understand, like oatmeal and red wine, equally effective?
Well, when you look at plant sterols, what you might see is called stanol or sterol esters. And basically what that is they've added in a certain type of, you could kind of think of it as a fatty acid, but it's added into different products. And it certainly has been found to decrease blood cholesterol levels. If you look at some of the first things we saw were things like Benecol margarine or Take Control margarine. And now you see these esters in something as simple as yogurt. There's yogurt on the market now that has this in it. And the studies have been pretty significant in that these type of esters, when you get them in your body, they kind of act like cholesterol would act, but they sort of displace cholesterol in the body. And so instead of absorbing as much cholesterol, you're utilizing this stanol or sterol ester, and it helps some of that cholesterol so that it's not absorbed in the body. In other words, that brings down your blood cholesterol levels because of that. And so these products have been on the market for a while now. They've certainly been studied for years and years and years. And there are a lot of good studies that have actually shown up to maybe 14 or 15% reduction in LDL cholesterol, and that's quite significant. I've had a lot of clients who've even been on cholesterol-lowering medications, and this is something we add. Usually it's 2 servings a day, depending upon the type of product. We also find it in orange juice that has these esters added to it as well, some of the heart orange juices. So I'm a real big fan of these because I find, you know, there have been a lot of safety studies on these that they don't cause additional problems. Generally, they're not. They appear to be very safe, and it is one way that you can bring down your lipids without medication, or maybe in addition to medication, bring them down even more. Certainly cardiologists now are telling us that, and certainly research is, that perhaps bringing down blood lipids a little bit more and a little bit more and really continuing to do that could even give greater benefits. So we're looking at other ways that we might combine foods or add different foods to the diets, even if you're on some type of cholesterol-lowering medication. You know, if you look at something like oatmeal, there have been positive studies with oatmeal, no question about it. Oatmeal is a gummy fiber, so is barley, so is something like beans, and they're all that type of gummy fiber which might bind some of those bile acids or cholesterol-like products in the body. Probably the reduction you're going to get from those is not as high as these esters. And so I would certainly look at these esters as a real cornerstone of what you're doing if you do have high LDL as a possibility.
Well, now, you seem to think that this is very, very safe. I mean, there's no problem or one wouldn't have to worry about adding this to the diet under any circumstance?
No, I mean, the studies have been out there for a long time. When these types of compounds first came out, they tended to not be as refined as they are now. And so what we find now is the products that are on the market now really have been studied for a long time, very well refined, and there's not the concern with, oh, does this affect absorption of, let's say, vitamin A, vitamin D, some of these other vitamins as much. And generally on a well-balanced diet, that is not a problem. But I would treat this like another medication. Basically, it's a type of thing where you have to do it consistently. You have to get enough. Again, usually that's 2 servings a day, around 2 grams or so. And you would want this to be something that your cardiologist knows about because, again, you may see some real significant drops with this, but it also should be something that's kind of in your regimen in terms of what medications you might be doing or other foods you might be using too.
You think 2 grams would be about the amount you'd be looking at on a daily basis?
Yeah, a lot of the studies I've looked at that. Usually what you'll find is that the 1 serving of a product is half of what you need for the day in almost all these products, whether it's, again, orange juice or whether it's a yogurt or whether it's cholesterol-lowering margarine like Benecol or those spreads or things. Generally, it takes two servings a day to meet your full requirement. You might get one serving of a vegetable spread and one serving of yogurt and get those in a day. So it wouldn't have to be the same product twice a day either.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Next, we talk with a listener on line one in Eureka. Hi.
Hi. A very short question, and I know it's kind of a big area, but I'd like your opinion. What is your views about the whole phenomenon of, quote, the carb diet, unquote, and especially as it relate to persons who are diabetics?
Well, if you look at the low-carb diet that's out there that's still not very popular now, but still somewhat popular, still see some things on there. In terms of, the benefits overall, what we've seen with some of these very low-carb diets, maybe all the way to Atkins, which is extremely low, or maybe some of these that aren't quite as low, like South Beach diet, but they're certainly lower carbohydrate, is we find for some people it really does decrease the amount of calories you take in. And so we have seen success in a lot of people in terms of weight loss. One of the questions is, once you go back eating normally, do you gain that weight back again? And that's one of the potential concerns. The biggest thing we find with these low-carb diets is that it's more related to the people to people really cutting out calories, and that's why they're losing weight. And so from a health standpoint, there's no question in my mind that from a health standpoint, low-carb is not the answer. The answer is certainly more fruits and vegetables, more fiber, maybe not too much extra carbohydrate in terms of sugars and maybe extra sweets and soda and that kind of stuff. That's a good thing that came out of this low carb is people got aware of what they were taking in with extra sugar, and I think that's important. But then you also want to look at, again, on a long-term basis, what's healthy. We know adding more fruits and vegetables are healthy. We know adding more whole grains are really healthy and beneficial for us. And so I don't think low carb needs to be the way to go, but I do think lower fat and lower sugar, yeah, those are things we do need to look at. That brings down some of the calories. At the same time, you're not missing out on all these different food groups. Here's a good example of something like rice. I think rice has really gotten kind of bagged on this diet, as well as potatoes and some other things. And if you have, particularly if you have brown rice, you get a lot of fiber with it, you get a lot of B vitamins, you certainly get the carbohydrate, but it's going to be real healthy for you. And something like sweet potatoes, which on a lot of diets say no sweet potatoes, no carrots, things like that, well, they're loaded in a lot of nutrients. Yes, they have carbohydrate, but they're extremely high in a lot of vitamins and minerals and antioxidants. So looking at things just on carbohydrate content is not a really good way to look at, you know, total nutrition in a diet. But watching portions, being aware of maybe added foods that have a lot of extra sugars and fats and things like that that give you extra calories, that's really important.
Does the listener have a follow-up?
Yes, I do. In the diabetic seminars I've been to, it appears that the regimen of the diet for diabetics is based around counting carbs. Do you have any specific thoughts on that?
Well, that's true. What research has really pointed to in the last 5 or 10 years with diabetes is that the total amount of carbohydrates is really the main thing we look at. Because it's a certain amount of carbohydrate you take in, again, whether that's in sugar or whether that's in a banana or whether that's in a carrot, whatever it is in, the total amount of carbohydrate in a meal tends to reflect on what your blood sugars are going to do. And so that's where we're looking at kind of counting carbohydrates for diabetes to find out how much carbohydrate you take in. The other thing, though, to remember with that is that what else affects blood sugar? If you do have a little fat in the meal, that might affect blood sugar. If you have more fiber, that affects blood sugar. So counting carbs is one avenue to look at. But the important thing to note with that, too, you know, if I had a client who was needed 2,000 calories a day, let's say, then their total carbohydrate intake, if you had 50, 55, maybe even 60% of that, is going to be a lot of carbohydrate. So that's not necessarily a low-carb diet.
Uh-huh.
It's just a monitoring the amount of carbohydrate you eat at one time. I think the biggest thing we're finding with diabetes is really portion size, because if you eat a lot at a meal, for instance, I had a client not long ago who was coming in not eating breakfast, eating a really little lunch, but eating most of his calories at night, probably 1,500 calories at the evening meal. It's too much for your body to handle, you know, when you're diabetic, because that is just way too much carbohydrate to process and be able to handle. So what we've done is broken down that carbs throughout the day with some fat and protein and fiber, and that really moderates blood sugar levels. The biggest thing we're really looking at for benefit is how do you keep blood sugar levels fairly consistent throughout the day? if blood sugars get way high or way low, you go a long time between eating, things like that, we know that that starts to affect the blood vessels because you got too much sugar in your system. And so we're trying to break that down. You're trying to get 5-minute walk here and there throughout the day, anything that might burn some of that blood sugar so that you're not going these highs and lows.
Yeah.
But you're really staying more moderate. And that means you do need carbohydrate. I mean, I still have people come in and say, you know, I'm not going to eat any. I'm trying to cut my carbs way down because I'm diabetic. Well, that's not what we recommend because you do need carbohydrate for energy. You just don't need too much at any one time.
Yeah. I know a reporter, a science writer who is diabetic, and you know, she would get busy during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when she'd run into trouble if
sure.
she skipped. But if she, you know, she did breakfast, lunch, snack, dinner, mm-hmm. if she spread it out, she was in great shape.
Yeah.
How does fiber affect blood sugar?
Well, fiber, when you think about how, you know, the body is going to respond to food in the system. You know, if you have a lot of straight sugar, let's say you do drink a soda or something like that, and you're used to having kind of straight sugar like that, that might get into your bloodstream real quickly. And then your body, again, is going to have to respond by kicking out insulin, or you're going to have to get insulin from somewhere. Whereas if you have something that's more fibrous or more gummy, it kind of slows down the whole process. So the food is turned into energy more slowly. You make blood sugar more slowly. And so naturally, you're going to end up not having these big ups and downs as much, but more gradual up in blood sugar, gradually decreasing in blood sugar. And so we find that fiber keeps, you know, because it keeps food in the system longer, it slows down everything in the absorption and digestion in the intestinal tract, that certainly may be beneficial with diabetes, as well as, you know, having high cholesterol, maybe cutting down on some of the, helping take out some of those added fats in the system as well. And so fiber is one thing we really focus on with diabetes, not just looking at total amount of carbohydrate.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Registered dietitian Susan Kundrat is our guest this afternoon. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us with questions about diet, nutrition, and exercise. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Well, now we're here in the neighborhood of whole grains. Let's talk about this and the new dietary guidelines. All adults should eat at least 3 servings of whole grains every day. You mentioned brown rice. You mentioned sweet potatoes. Obviously, a really good, you know, the kind of bread I'm talking mm-hmm. about, that serious whole grain crunchy
right.
stuff. That's obvious. Mm-hmm. Wild rice?
Wild good rice, choice. Too, has more fiber than yeah. white rice because it's, again, more chewy.
It's a grain.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, not even a rice. Are there other things? Barley, you mentioned?
Right.
Oatmeal?
Mm-hmm. Barley and oatmeal. And, again, a real easy place to get more fiber is looking at the cereals that you eat. And one thing I look for is try to get at least 3 grams of fiber per serving.
3 grams, okay.
Of course, now we have cereals out there that are 10 or 15 grams of fiber per serving, but you know, we're shooting for at least 20 grams, preferably more like 25 to 30 grams a day of fiber to give you kind of an idea of what we're shooting for. But you know, a good example is, let's say if you have wheat Chex versus rice Chex or corn Chex, wheat Chex are going to have a lot more fiber. They would be a better choice. Or if you're looking for fiber, maybe a whole wheat flake cereal versus a corn flake that maybe is not much fiber. So depending upon what you're looking for, you can certainly find that. And so that's an easy place. And, of course, we do have all kinds of things like the All Bran and Bran Butts and those that are extremely high in fiber. And if you like, a lot of people will tell me, well, I just can't eat those types of cereals because I feel like I'm eating, you know,
yeah.
rabbit food
sticks.
Or something, or sticks. But one good way to do it, something that we do at home, is we just mix them. I mean, we mix that half and half with another cereal. So maybe you like Life cereal, and you'd throw in some of the twigs into it, and you would eat that together. Now, that's not so bad, and you get a little bit more flavor. But that's an easy place to get it. And then the other things you want to look for is, okay, are there other options? If you really like pasta, now you can find whole wheat pasta. You can find whole corn pasta. You can find even rye pasta. There's all kinds of things out there that would be more of a whole grain if you really eat a lot of pasta, because pasta is generally a refined grain.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of fiber, a little bit of fiber in pasta, but not a lot. And so really looking at those things, and, of course, then the whole array of wheat berries and rye berries and all those kinds of things, if you really want to get to the natural grain, you can buy those in bulk and you can boil those, and that can be your your grain too. So there are ways to really move towards this whole grain movement. And of course, I think the simplest two things are to look for bread with at least 2 grams of fiber per slice and cereal with maybe at least 3 grams of fiber per serving. And those would be fast ways. It might be things you're eating already. So it wouldn't be a real difficult way to start adding. There are 2 whole grains right there. And then again, if you have rice or pasta, try to give the whole wheat varieties or whole grain varieties of those.
Yeah, and apparently whole grains. I wasn't aware of this, and I listen to you. When you speak, I listen. But apparently whole grains, what we've been talking about, you know, how it can help, you know, keep your cholesterol under control. But then there's this, that's part of the protection against heart disease. Now, here's what I didn't really realize is that also whole grains contain antioxidant vitamins and phytochemicals and trace minerals. So there's more right. than just the fiber
right.
thing happening.
Exactly. There. I mean, when you look at some of these natural grains, they would have these antioxidants and B vitamins and some other nutrients that are just naturally in the grain. They haven't been removed. And if you take a product and you put it into a grain that's really more of a refined, often you remove a lot of those vitamins and minerals and natural antioxidants that you'd want to have in a product. And so that's one way to get some of these natural benefits from the foods themselves.
Okay. And when we talk about fiber, can we also get fiber from raw veggies?
We sure can.
Okay.
From fruits and veggies are excellent sources of fiber too. So again, if we're getting those 4 or 4.5 cups of fruits and veggies, that would easily be, in most cases, a good 10 grams of fiber, maybe more. If you had all prunes, it'd certainly be a lot more, but you probably wouldn't do that. But you know, you could get maybe 10, maybe 15 grams there. If you get 3 or 4 whole grains, you might get another 6 or 8 grams of fiber. And so, and another thing I really recommend that's very inexpensive and an easy way to get more fiber is just, again, looking at beans. Look at beans as an option, pork and beans, black beans, refried beans, as an option for either a meat substitute in a meal or as your grain. And so, you know, you've got a salad, you've got broccoli, you've got beans as your side, and you have a chicken breast. And so your side is baked beans as opposed to being rice or pasta or something like that. Extremely high in fiber. And so, you know, I really recommend having beans at least once a week. A lot of people say they like them, they just hardly ever eat them. Well, it's a very inexpensive mm-hmm. source of protein and fiber.
Okay. And just to review here, I got a couple of people waiting to talk with us. Overall fiber, 20 to 30 grams per day? Is that right?
Generally recommend, it's based somewhat on body weight. Women generally don't need as much as men, but you want to try to get at least 20 grams a day.
Okay. And then as far as whole grains, 9 grams per day? 3 grams per serving, 3 servings a day?
Yeah, in terms of fiber, you could easily get 9 or so grams of fiber right there in the grains.
Yeah. We should develop a little scorecard.
That's a good idea. We'll have to work on that.
Let's talk with another listener. Cell phone, line 4. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
I'd like to try to keep this quick and simple. I have a three-part question.
Okay.
Just listening briefly, heard you mention the cholesterol count. My brother has that problem, and I thought of recommending olive oil, and I was wondering if you could reflect that. If I were to substitute my meat with beans, do you have any ideas what I could do for mind clarity? Because I did go vegetarian once, and I noticed I kind of got turned into a dingbat. That's all I need to ask.
Okay,
good questions. Olive oil certainly is one of the fats that we recommend using more just for overall health, but also for if you do have high cholesterol. But we find that using a more of a monounsaturated fat like olive oil or canola oil or one of those tends to be more beneficial in terms of your cholesterol levels and fatty acid profile. So olive oil is an easy one to use more of. Another one that I recommend in terms of getting some additional fat is looking at flax. Flax oil isn't something you necessarily cook with, but you might use a little bit. You could certainly use it in some salad dressing or use the actual ground flax seeds, which again are real fibrous and a gummy type of fiber that may help with cholesterol reduction as well as cancer prevention and some other things. We're finding a lot more about flax as we go along. And then when you look at something like, you know, replacing meat with beans, you wouldn't have to do it all the time. And if you feel, some people feel better eating more meat or they feel better eating more protein. When you do substitute, if you've got straight, let's say chicken breast or a lean steak, and you substitute the same amount of beans for that, you're not going to get as much protein because beans also have carbohydrate and other things in them. And so what I find sometimes is people can't eat as much protein when they're substituting all beans for all meat. And so it's something you might want to do, say, gosh, I'm going to eat a little bit more fish and lean meat like chicken or lean pork loin or lean roast, things like that. So I'm cutting my fat down, still getting the protein, but also adding in some beans. And that's the way I would do it, because you may just feel better having some more protein in your diet. That's an easy way to do it, but still get the benefit of beans and fiber.
Okay, let's talk with another listener. Caller in Urbana on line one. Hello.
Hi. I took a food class, and the woman that taught it was saying how good grapes were because they had tannin in them. And I want to know what tannin does for you.
Well, I would say that the most important thing that you're going to find in grapes probably are in the red grapes, and that would be resveratrol. You might have heard of resveratrol, which is it's an antioxidant that's found in a lot of different foods, but found a lot in grapes, and particularly red grapes. And it can be beneficial in terms of cardiovascular health. And that's why a lot of these studies that we've looked at for grapes have really focused on red grapes. And then they focused on the grapes themselves, but even more than that, the purple or red grape juice, like the real strong purple grape juice, because they tend to be loaded in a lot of these antioxidants and may be helpful particularly in cardiovascular health when you look at this resveratrol, and how if you get more of that in your diet, it tends to keep your blood vessels more pliable and kind of more soft and be able to move a little bit more easily. So so that's really probably the most beneficial effect that I think, you know, you would see in grapes. Tannins will also give some color and some of the flavor or acidity to what you find in some fruits and vegetables as well. But mostly what we've been looking at in terms of what's been studied has been this resveratrol or particular antioxidants that you do find in grapes.
Okay, so you're saying actually the deep red juice is even more beneficial than the fruit.
Right. Okay. I think that having, you know, if you're looking at juices and getting a serving there, having, you know, one of the little small cans or 4 or 6 ounces of Concord grape juice for clients of mine who have cardiovascular disease, that's one thing I always recommend because, again, it's just a real shot of that strong antioxidant that a lot of studies really have been very positive with in terms of keeping the blood vessels more pliable. That's one area of cardiovascular health. We've talked about that on the show before, and I think one of the ways that a lot of nutrition research is moving, not just to decreasing cholesterol, but how do you keep your arteries healthy so that even if you do have more lipids, blood fats in there, they don't stick onto the sides of the arteries and your arteries are not so hard and more apt to develop a clot and develop some problems there.
Yeah. Thinking of brightly colored juice, I think of cranberry juice. Is this resveratrol also in cranberry juice?
Well, there are a lot of antioxidants that are found in berries and in cranberries in particular, and blueberries. You see a lot more blueberry juice on the market, things like that. And so all the berries are going to be really helpful for you too. And so looking at that as a way, when we see some of these antioxidant profiles and which foods are the highest, you know, tea comes up really high, berries come up very high, of course spinach and kale, and a lot of these brightly colored things are very beneficial because of the natural antioxidants that are found in there.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller in line in Terre Haute on line two. Hi.
Well, you sort of took my question away. I've been reading the studies that Welch has sponsored about Concord grape juice, as opposed to physicians usually are opposed to recommending red wine, but 6 ounces a day seems to be it. But I'd like to go a little further with this. To my surprise, with cholesterol down around 150, I had a blockage, and so I'm really aware of this now. So I'm got to raise the HDL, okay? I'm into niacin therapy to augment statins. I'm fish oil. I'm grape juice, and I exercise nearly an hour a day. Now, what would you go beyond that?
Well, I think you're doing a great job because HDL, as people may know, HDL doesn't move as well as LDL reduction with, let's say, a lower fat diet or higher fiber and things. But the things that we do look at for HDL, there have been good studies on alcohol and HDL. And again, like you're saying, most of the time we don't recommend people start drinking if they don't drink already. But we do. But there's some benefit that seems to be helpful with some people with just the alcohol itself, a serving or two a day if that's what you would normally have. And looking at fish oil like you're doing, eating more fatty fish, making sure you're getting perhaps fish oil if that's supplemented and it's kind of monitored by your doc, that can be very beneficial as well. In terms of HDL, the other thing we kind of look at is looking at, can you add more of these good fats in the diet? Things, again, like sunflower seeds, and we talked about flax seeds that have some of this good fat, more omega-3 natural fat that you'd find more in a grain product rather than fish. Almonds, walnuts, some of those nuts that have been studied perhaps to be beneficial. Most of the studies find that things don't necessarily decrease or increase HDL that much, but if we can have a better profile and they don't decrease HDL, that's good. And so some of these good fats can be beneficial in those areas too. But gosh, I think you're doing a great job, because from all the things that we know, you want to maximize the medication and how that could help you, like you're doing. You do want to look at more good fats, like you're doing with the fish, and then maybe I would suggest looking at, could you add some more almonds or walnuts,
well,
or some of these good fats?
Well, I just ate some walnuts before I called you. I'm doing that, too. I mean,
you're in good shape.
Well, it's a shock. You know, now I've got my HDL down to about 120, but, I got my HDL down to 6, my LDL to 60, but I can't get the HDL above 45. Just seems doesn't happen.
It's a tougher thing to do, but we do know that this, you know, the fact of exercising like you're doing, cardiovascular exercise is one thing that in some people increases it a little bit. Sometimes it takes a while. So that's exactly what you want to do. And then you do want to look at, okay, lipids are the one thing that's a factor. Obviously for you, your lipids weren't that high to begin with. They're one factor, but just by exercising as much as you're exercising, that decreases your risk a lot. And so you do want to look at these other things you're doing, stress management techniques, relaxation, some of the other things that we know are factors.
Well, I appreciate your comments.
Thanks for the call. And next we talk with a listener on line 3 in Champaign. Hi.
Yes, I'm interested in bilberry. I've been reading some stuff by James Duke, and the herbal scientist, and he noted in one of his works that it has, I forget what it is exactly in blueberries, but it has three times as much of what is good for you in blueberries. So he was noting that bilberries are actually far better for you than blueberries are, and so I was wondering what you thought of that, and also how you could get bilberries, not simply an extract or something like that.
Right.
Also, I don't know if you've, my guess is you've seen Super Size Me, the film.
Mm-hmm, I have.
And something that interests me about that is not only simply that this fellow within 21 days was suffering from at least temporary liver damage, but that if you saw that they have extra features in the DVD, and I was shocked when he, in the special features portion, he put French fries, simply locally made French fries, and compared them in their when you put them in a jar for a period of weeks to see what would happen compared to McDonald's fries. And he noted that you could see within 7 to 10 days they turned black, the local ones did, which were actually just made with regular oil. And the McDonald's one, after 11 weeks, it's still not changed. They literally looked like they'd never been touched. And so I'm curious whether you think what your opinion is of the kinds of things we're putting in our bodies with the fries and so on, which is quite different from the bilberry question and note.
Right. Well, let me talk to the bilberry first. Bilberry certainly is an herb that's gotten more attention lately too, or in, like you say, mostly what we'll find is extracts or the format that you might take it, more supplemental format and that kind of thing. I'm not aware of a lot. I'm trying to think if I've actually seen to be able to buy bilberry, and I don't know that I've seen that. But usually what in many of the studies we'll look at it as far as an extract or a supplemental type thing. In fact, I was reading some things about nutrition and herbs and exercise, because I'm going to be writing an article on that whole area, which is kind of interesting in itself. But, bilberry has kind of been looked at for, does it help with inflammation? Does it possibly help with immunity and maybe a lot of different things? And if you look at antioxidant profile and foods or herbs that are much higher in antioxidants, they tend to be helpful in a lot of these areas. And so I think that that's one that has gotten more attention and something that we need to keep our eyes on. I don't know that it's that accessible in terms of actually eating it, but certainly blueberries are, and that would be something that would be easy to take in to get some of the same benefits, like you're saying. But if you look, your other question about Super Size Me, I have not actually seen that portion on the extra DVD, but I've heard about it, so I need to purchase that. But I saw the movie itself, and I do think that, when you look at what we're taking in terms of the processing and in terms of the additional things that are added to foods just to try to keep them from spoiling and things like that. You know, do we really know what a lot of these things do to our bodies over long periods of time if you eat a lot of them? I'm pretty convinced that once in a while, if you have something like that, our bodies can handle breaking things down and getting rid of them. But the real big concern for me is just people who might eat once or twice or even three times a day like he did in the movie, and how that does affect your really what's going on inside your body. And I think a lot of people probably just don't get tested very often to even know what their lipids would be or what kind of effect these types of foods are having. And so I think the thing to for us all to remember, sometimes people will tell me, well, I do that because it saves time and it's cheaper. But really, you can eat really healthy and it doesn't have to be expensive. I don't really buy that idea that, you know, it's going to take a lot of money to eat really healthy. You don't necessarily have to. Like we were talking about beans. Beans are probably the most inexpensive thing. And if you have beans and rice and if you have a salad or something, that's not going to be an expensive meal. So I think, you know, there's obviously concern. I thought the movie was really good, you know, because I thought it brought up a lot of things that make us think about what we're really doing, because so much of it is just cultural. You know, we travel, we're on the go, we're running, mm-hmm. we're stopping fast food, we're driving through, and we didn't used to drive through as much. All those things just make it easier to eat fast. We're eating in the car. It all kind of piles in to make it, you know, more typical for us to eat fast food. And certainly some fast food can be very healthy, but if you are eating a lot of fried things, that goes back to what kind of damage that might be doing in your body. So,
yeah. What do you think, Susan, about there have been some efforts on the part of fast food restaurants to offer some alternatives? Do they need to do more? What's your opinion of that effort on the part of fast food restaurants?
Well, I do think that restaurants, we need to keep looking at ways that they can help people eat healthy and eat fast, because the bottom line is our, you know, we're not going to be slowing down at all in the way we live our days. And so we do need to have fast food, quick options, drive-thru options that are healthy. I mean, we really do need to have. And there, even if you look at all the array of different salads that you have now versus what we had a couple years ago, that's definitely been a positive move. And so as long as you're not using a lot of dressing or a lot of high-fat dressing, you can eat pretty healthy at McDonald's or somewhere and get a decent salad and things too. But it's also really easy to not eat healthy there. So I think we have to keep, hopefully what these big companies will do will provide different options and try to educate on it. I mean, a good example is Subway, where, you know, it's been obvious that that's been very successful, the healthy attitudes that they're kind of trying to promote. So hopefully we can keep that going.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Urbana on line one. Good afternoon.
Hi. I had been adding ground up flaxseed a bit to my cereal, and then I had run out of it for a while and hadn't bought any. Finally, I bought some more, ground it up, and dumped a bunch on my cereal. And that night, and I was pretty uncomfortable with sulfurous burps and a lot of gas. And I'd had this once before with when we were traveling with a bacterial infection. I thought, I wonder whether I've got, whether it's something else that I've eaten or whether it was that I got over-enthusiastic with the flaxseed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember how much I put on, but it seems to me that a little bit goes a long way with ground-up flaxseed. Can you give me some advice?
Yeah, it could have been a number of things. I mean, flaxseed is definitely can affect your system positively because of the fibers, because of the good fats and things. But usually we recommend kind of starting with a teaspoon a day and gradually moving up to maybe up to 2 tablespoons a day. But even with that, that's almost kind of more therapeutic. But so part of it might have been your system was not used to handling it, you know, because it is so high in fiber and does have quite a bit of these good fats in it. It might have been harder to digest if you weren't used to having it in your system. So that could have been part of it. The other thing with flaxseed too is we want to make sure that the product that you're using is fresh because it is so high in fat that sometimes if you get a batch that's not very fresh and then you grind it and it's a little bit rancid or so, it's not as fresh as it could be, that could really upset your stomach. And that could give you kind of indigestion and things like that too. And so, you know, might want to check that and make sure what you got was not spoiled.
Store that in the freezer then?
The best way really is to store either in the refrigerator or the freezer.
Okay.
But the best way is to store the whole flax seeds themselves cold and then grind what you need for a couple days at a time and still store that in the fridge so that it can't, you know, get rancid as easily.
Well, I had just bought some from Strawberry Fields. I think they have a fairly high turnover. I don't know. How do you tell something like that is rancid?
usually by the smell. I mean, if you grind it and it really smells foul, then it's probably old. But, you know, it might have been. I certainly have had people who've had too much flaxseed at one time, and then that was problematic as well. So, but, yeah, just be aware when you grind it of how it does smell. If it smells pretty fresh or doesn't smell kind of spoiled, then you should be in good shape there.
Okay, I've got a number of other folks waiting to talk with us, so let's go next to Chicago, line 4. Hi.
Hello. I'm curious about the matter of fiber, and particularly from grains, as to the phosphorus content in grains and the relationship to calcium. Because I understand that if you have an excess of phosphorus, this has a tendency to drain off some of the calcium we retain. You know, we have phosphorus is in meat, phosphorus in the grains, as I said. Does that have a particularly significant effect on calcium?
Well, like you mentioned, you do want, generally we kind of look for a 2-to-1 ratio of calcium to phosphorus in the foods that you eat overall, so that you're not getting too much phosphorus and not enough calcium and maybe making it harder to maintain bone strength. That's kind of one thing we look for. And so generally phosphorus, unless you're eating a lot of really high phosphorus foods, like you mentioned, one of the highest is meats that tend to be real high, or we see dark sodas that have phosphates in them, or, you know, if you drink a lot of soda, not much milk, we tend to, you know, there could be some problems with that. But generally with whole grains, you're going to find just a lot more antioxidants too, a lot more benefit overall. And so I don't think there's really a problem with, you know, too much phosphorus from too many whole grains or anything like that.
I have another question. Have you heard anything about relating to diabetes, the our intake of foods that might precipitate some rise, the effect of cinnamon? I heard cinnamon is now being recognized as having some attributes that can benefit those who are taking sweets or sugar and things like that.
Cinnamon is definitely one herb that's been looked at, and there have been a few studies that show some promise. I think we're still early in the research, but there have been some studies where people took in maybe a quarter teaspoon of cinnamon twice a day, and there was some correlation with lower blood sugars. And so I know a lot of people are doing that. The biggest thing with cinnamon is you probably don't want to take in too much. There have been concerns that people taking in so much cinnamon that could there be some other problems related to that. Of course, it's an herb and, you know, that kind of thing. So it'd want to be in smaller amounts. But, yeah, it's really promising research. And so we're really looking forward to some more studies coming out on cinnamon and blood sugar regulation.
Okay, let's see if we can get another caller or two in before we have to wrap up. Next, we go to line 2, listener in Champaign. Hi.
Hi. I was talking to another nutritionist, and I was asking them about soybean sprouts. Hello?
Yes.
And they alluded to some sort of a problem with soybean sprouts, and it didn't expand and say what that would be. Do you have any idea?
Well, I think the biggest thing with sprouts in general is you want to just make sure that there is not a problem with too much bacteria. You know, we've seen some problems with sprouts in that some people will get sick if there's a lot of bacteria in there. Some people recommend no sprouts at all. I don't certainly go to that route. If you tend to be, you know, low immune status or something like that, or pregnant or anything like that, we generally say kind of stay away from it, so in case there would be a problem. But I think that's probably been the biggest concern, is that we want to make sure that everything is, you know, not a high bacteria count, and certainly many times they aren't high, and sprouts in general, if they're prepared correctly and grown correctly, it doesn't necessarily need to be a problem. But that might be the concern that the nutritionist was talking about.
Okay, there's nothing particular about soybean sprouts, though.
Not that I know of.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. And we talk next with a listener in Urbana, line 3. Hi.
Is it me?
That's you.
Good afternoon. I like your show. I had a question about this soy cream. How do you see that soy cream? If somebody takes soy cream instead of ice cream?
Well, soy cream, you might see things like Soy Dream or some of these kind of ice creams that have soy milk in them, as opposed to having milk in them in general, making kind of the ice cream type thing. And they're pretty similar to ice cream, really, but they just have been made with the soybeans, and so the flavor's a little bit different. But they're very popular now for people who want to have some kind of dessert, but they don't want to have milk, or they don't want to utilize milk products. And so there are a lot of certainly you can buy them in little ice cream bars that are soy bars and actual soy milk, and You're not necessarily going to find a lot of soy protein in that or necessarily a lot of redeeming qualities there, but you're also not going to find the milk if you're trying to stay away from milk in general. So a lot of products out there now that taste really good.
I don't have a problem with the milk, but I just, I'm thinking of taking soy cream in the place of ice cream, not eating a lot of ice cream.
Yeah. The main thing you'd want to look for is the nutritional breakdown on the label. Some soy ice cream products are high in fat, and some are not very high in fat, just like ice cream. So you want to look and see, well, what am I really shooting for? If I'm trying to cut down maybe my fat intake, you could go with a low-fat soy dream type thing, or you could also go for ice milk, maybe that doesn't have the fat in it too.
I usually buy that soy cream, pecan soy cream something. I don't know.
Yeah, those can be a real good addition. And again, if you're looking for a dessert, kind of a healthier option maybe than cookies or brownies or something like that, because they will give you a little bit more nutritional value.
And what about frozen yogurt?
Frozen yogurt, perfect, because, again, a lot of those are low-fat, too. So the biggest thing with ice cream is you tend to get a lot of fat if it's real ice cream, and a lot of saturated fat. So if you can find brands that are lower in fat, lower in saturated fat, whether it's soy or frozen yogurt or so, that can be a real good way to cut down your fat intake but still enjoy it.
Okay. Check the label.
That's right.
Okay. We're out of time.
That went fast.
Susan Kundrat joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet, nutrition, and exercise. She is the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She's the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. You can find her on the web at www.eatandmove. That's E-A-T-N-O-E. Let me try that again. Let's back up. www.eatandmove.com. And Susan, we'll see you again next month.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, in April. Susan Kundrat. It's 8 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time. Settlement prices should be in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thank you very much, Celeste. From the Chicago Board of Trade, today after another good week in the bean pit last week, futures taking off about half the gains that they had for the entire week last week, up around, 25 cents or so for the week. And today they were down 14 and a quarter cents in the nearby March contract. We'll take a complete look at why that happened a little bit later this afternoon. No, there isn't any real apparent reason up front. But we'll talk with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodity Markets out of Newmarket, Indiana, about this and see what he gets as a reason why from the floor at the Chicago Board of Trade. I'm sure Wayne will have some sort of answer for us. We'll do that at 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock Central Time, 3 o'clock Eastern Time, just a few minutes away. Let's begin in the wheat pit this afternoon for the numbers from the Board of Trade. March contract at 326 high, low at 323. Settlement price at 323 and a quarter. They're down 5 3/4 for the day. May futures were off 4 3/4 with a high of 337 and a half, a low at 330 and a quarter. Settled there at 332 and a quarter. Once again, they were down 4 3/4 in that May wheat contract. July soft red winter wheat, the new crop, 344, the high, the low at 336 and a half. Settlement price there, 338, down 5 1/2 cents. In September, 349 and a half, the high, the low at 342 and a half. Settlement price at $3.43, and they were down 6 cents. December contract finished 6 lower as well, 358, the high, the low at 50 even, settled at $3.50 and a half cents for the December wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade. In the corn pit, the March contract, 209 and a half, the high for the nearby, the low at 205, settled at $2.05 and a half, down 3 1/2 for the day. And the May futures, 217 and a half a bushel, the high, the low at 212 3/4, settled 213 and a quarter, down 3 3/4. July contract in the corn pit now, 224 and a quarter, the high, the low at 219 and 3/4, settled 220 and a quarter, down 4 cents. In September futures, 229 and a half, the high, the low at 226. Settlement price at 226 and a half, down 3 3/4. December contract at 238 and a quarter, high, low at 234 and a half. Settled 234 and 3/4, down 3 1/2. March corn for the day, 243 and a half, the high, the low at 241, and a settlement price down on that low for the March corn. That's a 2006 contract, by the way, at the Board of Trade, down 3 1/2 cents today. March oats now, 173 3/4, the high, the low at 172 1/4. Settled 173 1/2. They were down 2 1/4 for the day. And the May contract, 153 high, or rather 153 settlement price, down 1 1/4 with a high of 154 and a low at 148. From the soy complex, nearby March soybeans for the day, down 14 1/4 cents. The high $6.22 and a half a bushel. The low at 607. settled just above that low at 608.5, down 14 and a quarter. May futures a 630 high, low at 615, settled to $6.16. They were down 13 and three quarters. And the July contract, 633 the high, low at 618, settled 620, down 13 and three quarters as well. August futures, 631.5 the high, the low at 618, settled 618, down 14 cents. And the September contract in the bean pit, 623 the high, the low at 611, settled 611.5. They were down 12.5 for the day. November contract, your new crop beans, 621.5 the high, the low at 608.5, settlement price $6.10.5. They were down 8.25 for the day. March bean meal, 184.50 the high, the low at 180.10, settlement price at 180.60, down 320. And the May meal, 187.50 the high, the low at 183.10, settled 183.70, down 330. March oil, 23.15 the high, the low at 22.75, settled 22.84. They were off 28. And the May oil for the day, 23.32 the high, the low at 22.82. Settlement price there at $22.97. They were down 33 at the end of the day. Hey, don't forget about our all-day ag outlook. That's tomorrow starting at 8:30 Central Time, 9:30 Eastern Time at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Should be a great show all day long. We'll go through about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We hope to see you then. I'll give you more details during the closing market report. Now here's Celeste Quinn with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange.
And I'm going to have those in just a moment, but we're going to pause here to give our engineers the opportunity to make an adjustment at our transmitter, switching from one transmitter to another. I guess they're not ready for me to pause there. So let's go ahead and jump on into what happened today on the Merc. March feeder cattle 103.20, the high, the low 102.75, the settlement 103.10, that up 42.5. April 102.50, the high 102.05, the low finishing at 102.30, up 62.5. May feeder cattle 101.10, the high $100.55, the low $100.97.5, the settlement, that up 55. March live cattle 80. Let's skip that one. That's not an active contract here today. April live cattle 89.50, the high 88.75, the low 88.90, the settlement, that down 12.5. June live cattle 84.92.5, the high 84.35, the low 84.87.5, the settlement, that up 47.5. April lean hogs 76.57.5, the high 75.05, the low 75.50, the settlement, that down 15. May 78.75, the high 77.65, the low finishing at 78.45, up 27.5. June 82.20, the high 80.90, the low, the settlement 81.45, up 12.5. July 78.55, the high, the low 77.30, the settlement 77.87.5, that up 35. March pork bellies 89.30, the high 88 even, the low, the settlement 88.97.5, that up 17.5. The Dow is up 21 points at 10,962. The S&P 500 up 4 at 1227.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety is proud to underwrite agricultural programming on WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.